listening to the Park Rush podcast. This is a theme park podcast. I'm Tom. Joining me, as ever, is Josh.
Hello there.
Hello there, Josh. How's it going?
Very good. Thank you. Yourself?
I'm melting. I'm melting.
Oh, dear. Whose idea was it to do five straight days of 30 degree heat in September? This is not what I signed up for as a British person.
It's global warming, climate change, global booming. What are we calling it these days? Global boiling?
Sure. Not global booming or whatever you nearly said. I don't quite know what that is, but at least in my case, this hot weather is getting me kind of acclimatized to Florida, which is only a few weeks away at this point. But before that, Josh, we can confirm that we are going to go to Chessington. So by the time the next episode of this fine podcast comes out, we will have been to Chessington. So that's exciting. You should definitely watch out on the socials for some hot content from the day on, I guess, Threads and Instagram. I've made a hot new Instagram, bespoke Instagram logo for the Park Rush account just to get it, you know, set and ready. It's looking beautiful, if I do say so. So, feeling good and ready for a theme park day out. The first one for a while. And the first one that we've done together since last Christmas. So, it's been too long, Josh. Hopefully it lives up to that one. That was a fine trip to Disneyland Paris.
That was excellent. I am pretty mild on Chessington. You know, theme parks are theme parks. I'm always excited for theme parks. Yeah, Chessington, it wasn't so great last time I went, but... You know, it won't be in the school holidays, so less kids and new rides that I've never been on before.
Well, like I said, folks, make sure you follow us on the socials for what sounds like is going to be a thoroughly underwhelming day out. Well done, Josh.
And the crowd goes mild. Woo-hoo!
Well done, Josh. And we wonder why our audience has stagnated for so long. Not even we enjoy what we do. How can we expect anyone else to?
I enjoy most theme parks. I like Disneyland. Disneyland was great.
Disneyland was great. You're not wrong. And I'm sure Chessington will be too, everyone. Brand new attractions, never before seen or experienced by the Park Rush team. So
you've got to love Jumanji as well, you know. Jumanji.
You've got to love Jumanji, exactly. Exactly. So please look forward to that.
Please.
Please. Anyway, before that, we've got a regular podcast to do. Picked out some news stories, as ever. A fine mix, I would say, of boardroom drama, a rental crisis, something that we can all relate to, and some new rides and restaurants. So just about everything you could possibly hope for. We'll start, Josh, with some very highbrow reporting from CNBC, of all places. CNBC being cited on the Park Rush podcast. Incredible. It's what all fine news outlets live for, is one day perhaps they will be cited on the Park Rush podcast.
For sure.
Got kind of the inside track. I quite like the headline here. I do hope it's a reference. Disney's wildest ride. Tell me that the writer of this article, Alex Sherman, likes the Mr. Toad ride.
He's probably going for more of a Big Thunder.
Maybe.
Wildest ride in the wilderness. Easy for me to say.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to go with the Mr. Toad thing. Too few Mr. Toad references are made in pop culture these days. I'm going to choose to believe that Alex Sherman is one of us. There are dozens of us who love Mr. Toad's wild ride. This is all about the kind of botched transition from one Bob to another. Bob Iger to Bob Chapek in... early 2020, excuse me, and then the transition back to Bob Iger from Bob Chapek. It's just my main takeaway from this fine piece of reporting, which I thoroughly recommend you go and read. It's a proper deep dive into what went on, is that I don't know if this sounds weird, Josh, I have an unusual level of sympathy for Bob Chapek coming out of this.
Wow.
Because no matter what you think of the guy, and, you know, we have our opinions, we're generally not fans of his, either from his time running Disney parks or from his time running Disney as a whole. But it's hard to imagine a more horrendous working environment than your former boss or your boss coming to you and saying, I'm going to give you my job. And you're thinking, great, okay. And then you take the job, but your boss, whose job you have taken to all intents and purposes, doesn't actually leave and just kind of hangs around like a bad odor, pointing out your flaws and the things that you're doing wrong. It would be like you finally move out of your parents' house, but then, I don't know, your dad comes with you and is constantly pointing out that you haven't cleaned this and you haven't done that. Your kitchen smells and there's a sock on the floor. You know what I mean? That's the kind of vibe I get from Bob Chapek's tenure at Disney, is that
yeah.
No matter what you think of the guy, I think he could reasonably expected that Bob Iger would have just left him alone, and yet he did not.
Very far from that. He didn't even leave his office.
It's a bit mad. And we did know at the time that the plan for Iger was to have this kind of transitional period where he would have this kind of, like, I guess, sort of ceremonial role almost. I think is outrageous. If anyone gets a ceremonial role at Disney, it's Mickey Mouse. I mean, that is not a role fit for one man or woman.
I don't think Chapek was up to it, but I think, you know, Iger's fundamentally to blame here for the whole debacle. He picked the guy, he hovered over his head. You can't do both. You can't retire and not retire. You know, Schrodinger's retirement.
Well, and also he had said for many years, right, that he would be leaving at some point. Iger, this is. So it took him a really long time to finally decide to leave. And I don't know, the timing seems a little suspicious, right? COVID was coming. Everyone could see it. That's the time he decided to get out. And he kind of handed what was already going to be a tough job over, but had really become a poison chalice because of COVID. It almost feels like, hey, you take this bullet for me, Bob, and then I'll come back once you've been riddled with many, many bullets, including bullets that they wouldn't have foreseen. Like, you had the whole don't say gay bill controversy with Ron DeSantis, which, as we've discussed many times, Bob Chapek basically played that as poorly as he possibly could have done. And then you had the Scarlett Johansson fiasco and putting Black Widow straight onto Disney Plus, and the furore that caused. Not a good look to basically having a very public fallout with one of your top talents. So those things were, I think, problems that were, if not entirely of Bob Chapek's making, because it wasn't in the case of the Don't Say Gay bill. But as I say, he played the hand he was dealt very, very poorly. So, you know, those two things plus COVID. I mean, the guy, he's probably going to go down in history as having one of the worst tenures of any Disney CEO. Yeah, at the same time, like I say, I don't really think Iger set him up for success necessarily, which sounds like a crazy thing to say given how well Disney did under Bob Iger, but
Iger spent so much money buying, you know, Marvel and Star Wars and etc. and then he took all of the good years of Disney Plus when it first opened, and it's like it's almost like he knew full well that it was going to go bad after that because all of these streaming platforms dipped.
Just to cut across you, though, it only launched in late 2019 in the US. So it wasn't that long before COVID happened. And if anything, COVID was a real boom for streaming services, at least initially, because obviously everybody was stuck at home. I mean, I remember when I almost felt like starting a conspiracy theory, because I'm pretty sure Disney Plus launched here like the week we went into lockdown. I remember seeing these enormous Disney Plus billboards everywhere in London. And I was probably one of about 10 people that saw them each day, because I was one of the few people who was still having to drive to work, seeing all these immaculate Mandalorian billboards that there were like no commuters to look at them.
Yeah, you're probably right, actually. It probably is about then when it started. I don't know. I remember getting a good deal because some of the first subscribers to the platform. So you got a good deal on the annual membership. But it launched and it was like, oh, this is Iger's done this great thing. It's been great. Iger set the way for all of this. But then Chapek then had to deal with the fallout of everyone going back to work and cancelling their subscriptions. Certainly in America, like, everyone went, had to go back to work basically straight away, right? So it's just one of the things. It definitely was set up to fail in a sense. Whether he did it on purpose or not, I can't imagine he did do it on purpose, but I can't imagine he did it.
Yeah, I mean, just on that, everyone having to go back to work very quickly after the kind of initial wave of COVID. I mean, one of the things in this report that they go into some detail about is that apparently Bob Chapek wanted to furlough about 100,000 theme park employees when the parks first had to close.
Yeah.
And Iger was against that. He wanted to wait for kind of government aid to arrive and make it so that they could, you know, that the furloughed employees would have some form of income from the US government's sort of equivalent of the furlough scheme, I suppose.
Yeah.
So that was, you know, another point of contention. I mean, let's not try and paint, as this article perhaps tries to do, Bob Iger as some sort of man of the people, because, you know, well, a few weeks ago we were talking about his comments about the Hollywood strikes, and that man did not sound like an ally of the common worker.
No.
He very much was a sort of, hey, know your place. That was kind of his stance there. Obviously, the context is a little bit different when it comes to like a pandemic, which is forcing businesses to close and whatnot. But yeah, as I say, let's not pretend that Bob Iger is someone out there who is, yeah, he's not going to end up on a picket line. He's not going to join a union. He would rather all of those things did not exist. Why are all these people who aren't as well paid as me, Josh, why can't they just accept that as the status quo and get on with things? I mean, I'm doing well. The company's doing well. Why can't they be happy for me and the company, Josh?
It boggles my mind, you know, normal people being annoyed that rich people get loads of money. It's, you know.
I mean, obviously, you know, as Disney Parks fans, we're worried about Chapek taking over anyway. And I think a lot of people's fears definitely were well placed. You know, his management of the parks wasn't something that was particularly popular with park fans. There was this perception of cost cutting. There was this perception of it's all about the bottom line more than it is about the guest experience, which, to be honest, I think is the case and has always been the case. But I think it was just the balance was a little bit more fine before, and it was just way more obvious that the bottom line was what was more important to Chapek. And to be fair to the guy, I'm not sure he ever really tried to hide it that much either. Yeah, it was not a surprise to me that it didn't go well for him, and that he didn't, while he got dealt a rough hand, the fact that he played it badly is not really a surprise to me either. But, I mean, the hand that Iger has inherited is obviously not a great one. And there's this kind of rumour or this sort of suggestion, maybe they're just Chinese whispers, that his kind of long-term hope stroke ambition is actually to sell Disney, maybe to Apple.
It has been mentioned in his book before.
Hmm.
Would Apple want to buy it? Diversification, maybe. It seems like a bizarre. It's a super like doing it because it's good for the shareholders and they'll get loads of money. Kind of vibes, rather than doing what's best for the company. It might not be doing as good as it did last year or the year before, but it's still doing great. We have this definition of you're not doing good enough if you're not doing better than you were last year, which is a complete nonsense metric to use, but that's the metric that we use. Yeah, he's inherited a company where Chapek was considered so bad that now he can come back and look like the messiah, and he's risen from the ashes. He's going to save the company again. You know, I don't think that's going to happen either, but I don't know why you would. He's gone through this thing of buying Marvel. He bought Star Wars, he bought Fox. Why would he then
Pixar?
Pixar, yeah. Why would he then sell to Apple. That kind of doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to envisage a regulator even rubber stamping a Apple takeover of Disney, to be honest. But
yeah, but it's hard to say as well, like, because, you know, the commission over there tried to stop Microsoft buying Activision Blizzard. And I think they were quite within their rights to try and do that. And actually, it's probably the right thing to do in the grand scheme of things. But because of the precedent set by the market over 100 years or the commission by over 100 years, they're basically screwed. And anyone can buy anyone these days in the US.
Well, yeah. And I mean, it was, I guess, in that case, a tech company buying a tech company. Whereas in this case, perhaps you could argue that it's a tech company buying an entertainment company. I don't know. But
yeah.
Maybe you could get a Disney ticket upgrade program. Josh, you could pay monthly.
Cool. That'd be fun.
You know, Android owners aren't allowed in. You can't get your magic band on Android ever again.
Yeah. But that's the thing as well, because like if Apple owns Disney, it's pretty bad enough as it is. Like, it's pretty Apple centric anyway, but it'd be even worse.
But we could get a Ted Lasso ride.
Oh, sure, yeah, sign me up.
You know who would like to be bought by Apple, Josh? SeaWorld. They can't even pay the rent.
Oh God.
Yeah, this is quite extraordinary, actually. So this
like
comes
Birmingham
from
City Council.
This comes from the San Diego Union Tribune. The city of San Diego is suing SeaWorld to collect millions in rent payments that went unpaid during the height of the pandemic. The city has filed a civil complaint against the theme park for breach of lease with San Diego County Superior Court. Lawsuit says SeaWorld owed $12.2 million in outstanding rent, interest charges, and late fees. I guess now we know, Josh, why SeaWorld have been upping the prices on their food and drink recently. They haven't been paying the rent.
Can't pay these rent fees. That's a lot. That's a lot of rent.
It's a fair whack, isn't it? It's a fair whack. I mean, I can't think of another story quite like this involving what I would describe as a, you know, a real major player in the theme park industry. I know SeaWorld is not what it once was, but it's still, I think, despite all the controversy over the last decade or so, it's still got cachet. Like, I think if you asked man on the street to name, I don't know, five theme parks, there's a fair chance that they might say SeaWorld, you know? And to see...
Certainly in the US.
Certainly in the US. To see it in this kind of state is a bit... bit disconcerting, really. I mean, I guess the brand as a whole, the company as a whole, is doing all right. Like, they've started to obviously pivot from wildlife, marine life to conservation to, you know, just straight up thrill rides and roller coasters. But then, of course, we've got the Abu Dhabi SeaWorld, which recently opened, which is a bit maybe truer to the original vision of SeaWorld, but built with kind of modern tendencies in mind. In fact, I think all the sea life in that SeaWorld Abu Dhabi actually have more rights than the women over there, Josh, which is quite extraordinary. But the US parks, I think, have been struggling for some time, obviously in terms of their image, but also in terms of, I think, just trying to find themselves again. And whilst I have quite enjoyed pretty much all of the new coasters that certainly SeaWorld Orlando have built over the last sort of 5 to 10 years, the parks themselves, yeah, they don't really feel the same.
This is a kind of a thing that a lot of companies do where they would have once owned land. Maybe they didn't own this land, to be fair. And then they sell it off and then rent it back. It's a way of making money short term, but then long term, yeah, who cares about it long term? Because you won't be in charge by that point. You've made the company, you've made yourself loads of money. Same thing House Fraser did. Same thing BHS did over here. To British shop companies, short-term gain, long-term pain is the problem here. Realistically, what they should have done was try to sort out a contract with the city to, you know, pay off this unpaid rent over a long period of time, set up some sort of loan agreement. But they clearly haven't done that. Maybe that's what comes off the back of this.
Maybe, yeah. Here's another question then. So, this current lease that they have, SeaWorld San Diego runs to June 2048. Will the theme park still be open by then?
Oof. No.
There we go. Heard it here first.
San Diego might survive. Whether it'll be a SeaWorld park is the question mark, I would say.
Right, well, there we go. SeaWorld. I'm sure they will be able to pay this rent. It's just a bit of an embarrassing headline for them, I think.
Yes.
And not one you would expect.
A world of embarrassing headlines for SeaWorld.
Yeah, yeah. Not, as I kind of alluded to earlier, not one you would expect to read about a sort of major theme park brand that they have not paid their rent. It's not a good
look. But you know, it could happen to anyone. You know, the Merlin Entertainment doesn't own any of the theme parks over here. They rent all of that land. So
yes, indeed, a timely reminder.
Yes, it's actually one of these interesting things. Proper in the weeds here, but Richer Sounds, hi-fi and television sales company over in the UK, owns all of its shops so that it doesn't have to worry about increasing rent every year.
Not so, a sponsor, Richer Sounds, but an excellent company which by all accounts treats its staff very well.
Mr. Richer Sounds seems like a pretty reasonable guy. He's there for the betterment of the company and its staff, not for his bottom line.
Yeah, Bob, take a look at Mr. Richard Sounds. He's a man that you should take some cues from, I reckon.
Yeah, we could have just called him Mr. Richard, to be fair, because that's his name.
But could have called him Mr. Richard. Yes, that's true. Anyway, Disney. Back to Disney, Josh. A double dose of new details.
Ooh,
one for a whole land, one for a new restaurant. We'll start with the restaurant. That's the quicker one. So Tiana's Palace in Disneyland, new restaurant inspired by The Princess and the Frog, has now opened in New Orleans Square. So we've got a proper look at the interior. Looks pretty good to me, and sort of similar to how I feel about the planned work for Haunted Mansion in this park. Feels like, as I said last week, a kind of rising tide lifts all boats situation, and everything about it looks really good. So I'm very much hoping that the reimagined ride, when that opens next year, will be of a similar standard. But this looks nice to me, this restaurant. I like what they've done with the place, or the palace.
Yeah, for sure. It looks really cool. I like the kind of steamboat-esque top to it. It looks really cool.
Yeah, New Orleans inspired cuisine, as you would expect. Got some gumbo, some shrimp, some beignets.
Oh yeah.
Ingredients sourced from Louisiana.
The beignets look great.
Beignets do look good. The other thing, Zootopia Land. So this is opening this year at Shanghai Disney, and Disney announced a bunch of new details about this week. Chief among them, the signature attraction. It's called Zootopia Hot Pursuit. Now, given Disney's recent track record, if I asked you what a kind of new e-ticket Disney attraction would be, i.e. kind of what type of ride would it be, what would you guess? What would you expect it to be?
I would say trackless screen ride.
Well, Josh, I don't know how screen heavy exactly this ride is going to be, but you're damn right, it is indeed trackless. Disney love a trackless ride. We've had loads of these. Rise of the Resistance, Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway,
Ratatouille.
Of course, SeaWorld Orlando was the trendsetter, Josh, with March of the Penguin.
For
all the mess we just talked about SeaWorld, Disney would be lost without them, clearly.
To be fair, for a long, long while, I actually thought Spider-Man was a trackless ride, but obviously it's not.
Really?
Well, I mean, Rise of Resistance is trackless and has a drop element, so...
Well, yeah, but it's not trackless at that point, though, is it? It goes into, like, a sort of Tower of Terror-style lift system. It's basically a different ride while it's in there.
Well, yes.
Come on, Josh. You know, what's
going on? Could have been the same thing.
Absolute shambles. Spiel for this ride. So, guests will become rookie police officers at the Zootopia Police Department, which is, of course, where one Judy Hopps works in the film. And the setup is that all the residents of the city are getting ready for a big concert featuring Gazelle, who I... Was she Shakira in the film? I think she was.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, a big fan of how some of these animatronics are looking in the queue. So you'll be greeted by Officer Clawhauser, who is the cheetah, is he? Or a leopard? I forget. But more excitingly, you get Chief Bogo. Now, as this is in Shanghai, they're obviously all going to be speaking Chinese or some different variations of Chinese, aren't there? So I don't know. I guess Mandarin, I don't know. But I want this to come to the West, Josh, because I want Idris Elba to be able to reprise his role as Chief Bogo. That was Idris Elba, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
That'd be so good.
Yeah. Before you get on the ride, Chief Bogo says to you, right, strap in and you can go ride in on my scooter. And you head out into the city to catch Bellwether and her gang, who have kidnapped Shakira in order to prevent the concert, which is meant to unite the people of Zootopia, and get that concert cancelled. So you'll team up with Judy Hopps and Nick Wilde, who has become a police officer. He's the Fox character. I think it was it Jason Bateman who voiced him in the film?
I think
and,
so.
And the ride from that point on will basically be a police chase through all the different locales of Zootopia that you might recognise from the film. So like the city streets and then kind of the more jungly environment and stuff like that. It probably will be quite screen heavy, but I hope there'll be a decent mix of animatronics and physical sets as well, much like, well, I guess a bit like Ratatouille, but maybe more so like Rise of the Resistance. That'll probably be a big ask, but, you know, I think the modern Disney animatronics are so good that it would be nice if, as well as being part of the queue, they were also part of the ride itself.
Yeah, for sure. I actually think the car looks a bit like the Scoop from Spider-Man. It's got, you know, it's got a similar amount of seats, I think.
Looks like, what, two rows of four, is that? Possibly three?
Two rows of five.
Oh, two rows of five. Yes, you're right. Well, Spider-Man's three rows, Josh, is it not?
Three rows, right.
Yeah, your Spider-Man memory is obviously a little hazy today, Josh. Maybe you shouldn't be out here. But yeah, I hope the ride's good. And then as for the rest of the land, looks really great. So there's going to be live entertainment. There'll be meet and greets. I think the theming looks pretty on point. There'll be food as well at Jumbo's Cafe.
I like the snacks. The snacks look cool. Some big looking popsicles and donuts and things like that. Yeah, I think it looks really cool. I really want it to come over here, not over here, but in the West, so we get an English version. Because Jesus, I can't even learn Spanish, let alone Chinese. Yeah, maybe Animal Kingdom. Maybe that's a good spot for it. Who knows?
Well, they are doing something Zootopia there, right? Just not of this scale.
Yeah, I think so. That's the rumours, anyway.
Yeah. Did they not announce that at D23 last year?
Did they announce that? I lose track of what's rumour and what's D23 these days, because D23 changes like the wind as well on how scale and whatnot. So.
Right. Well, Destination D23, I mean, the Disney branding is so confusing at this point. I don't know. Is that the D23, or is that like some sort of offshoot of D23? I don't know, but that's happening this weekend. So we may get more on this. We may hear more about where Zootopia might pop up elsewhere. But yeah, for now, all we know really in terms of when this is coming is that it will come this year, before the end of this year. So obviously there's not actually that much long left of this year, scarily. So perhaps this weekend will be the time for them to give us a more specific date on when this is going to open up. But yeah, there you go, Zootopia Land. I really like Zootopia. In fact, was it not called Zootropolis over here?
It was, yes.
Yeah, I think it was. That is going to do it for this week's Park Crush podcast. I guess next week we'll talk about whatever was announced at Destination D23. But before then, as I said at the top, we'll be at Chessington. So keep an eye out on the Park Crush socials for stuff from there. The best place to go is links.parkcrush.com. That's where you'll find the Instagram and the TikTok and everything else. So there we go. We'll be back next week. Until then, stay safe and take it easy out there. If you're in the UK, try and stay cool. It is hot out there.
Hot, hot, hot.
Goodbye.
See ya.